They say God is love. Then I said, I doubt it. God is not love. Because if God is love, why did they allow cruel people to get all the properties away from me? And they say God is love. Why did they allow my father to be taken away from me? And my mother, the only one I knew. And if they say God is love, why am I on the street? And you tell me God is love?
Hi, I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb the continent for stories that matter. This is the second of our two-parter on the changing face of what it means to be an orphan in Zambia. If you've not listened to part one yet, I suggest you go back to hear my colleague Mutuna's story and meet Florence, the fabulous lady who took Mutuna in. Right, Mutuna, what are we doing in part two?
So, a lot has changed since the time I was orphaned. Zambia traditionally has an extended family system where family members hold each other up in tough times, including taking in orphans. But in the last 30 years or so, just like everywhere else, Zambia has become increasingly globalized. We've seen major fluctuations in the economy, and cultures have evolved under Western influences, so the nature of families has changed in a lot of cases. I guess a lot of families, which previously might have had countless aunts and uncles ready to step in for a child in need, just might not be like that anymore. We see so many children begging on the streets, and it's painful to really think that we never usually find out who they are or what their story is. So that's a story I want us to tell now, of someone who was orphaned just like me, but ended up in a very different situation.
And that's Vasco.
Yes, Severino Vasco. He's someone who I actually met 10 years ago through my work as a journalist. He works with charities helping kids living on the streets. He himself spent 7 years as a homeless child, so he has truly lived the challenges and struggles facing those children he's helping now.
So this is Vasco's story, grief and survival at far too young an age.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
My name is Severino Vasco. My dad was from Angola, so it is a Portuguese name. But I'm Zambian.
I'm speaking to Vasco remotely with Mutuna's help. He's on a sofa at home in Chilenge, in Lusaka, in the house which he shares with his partner and children. It's the kind of comfortable and secure environment that he remembers from his early childhood.
Before the street life, I had a different life. Dad was there. I had a very lovely stepmother. She was a very good woman.
In Vasco's life, he's had three important and loving parents. His biological mother, Alice, his father, Paul, and his stepmother, Juliet.
So my father's from Angola. He was part of the army, and so that's how he found himself in Zambia. So he married a widow.
Vasco's father had come to Zambia to get away from the civil war in his country, and then he married Alice. They had just one child together, Vasco. But Alice fell ill with breast cancer, and when Vasco was just 7 months old, she died. That loss, already painful enough, had other consequences for Vasco and his father's future with the family in Zambia.
By then, cancer was not very common, so they had no idea it was cancer. So my dad was accused of killing mom.
The disease and the treatment weren't well known at that time, and so his mother's family jumped to terrible conclusions about what had happened.
Dad was in trouble. And then because there was a language barrier, because Dad could speak Portuguese, Fefronso, and a bit of English, but he never spoke good Zambian. There was that communication barrier.
Paul couldn't defend himself. Relatives were convinced he was responsible for his wife's death. So he had to leave, taking baby Vasco with him.
They abandoned me with Dad, my aunties, my uncles, and Dad never wanted to talk about it.
At that moment, Vasco lost all his ties to his extended biological family. Father and son started again, and Paul married Juliet, who became a loving mother as Vasco grew up.
I must say she was a good woman, a very good woman. I had a good life. I was very happy. I was going to school. We were having 3 meals in a day. I know things were different. Sometimes we'd have 2 meals, but we always had something to eat. We had a shelter. I had my own bedroom. I'd go to school as a normal child with friends. I was just living a normal life. I wanted to be an engineer.
It was a car crash which changed Vasco's life forever.
He and my stepmom died. They died together.
Right.
They died in a road accident on my father's birthday, 15th May. I remember that day very well.
The memories of that day are too painful for Vasco to share. He was still a young child, but he didn't get the luxury of time and space to grieve for his terrible loss. In that moment, he had lost not only his parents, he'd lost his safety, his stability, his home. This was the moment where, in Mutuna's case, extended family had stepped in. But for Vasco, the only people around were relatives of his stepmother, who had no interest in taking on someone else's child. That was made clear to him when he asked if they would pay his school fees. He still remembers that response decades later.
They brought a shovel and said, no, these are the keys to your father's house. You can go open and let him give you money to go to school. What he meant really is that I should go dig my father from the graveyard. And that really got to me. So that's how I walked away. Because I couldn't beat them, I couldn't do anything. I was young, so I just walked away and went back to where we came from. So I walked for 3 days.
3 days?
Yeah, no food, nothing. That's the longest time I was ever hungry from the time my father died. So it was just a new experience. I went to my father's graveyard. I stayed for a few days there. That's when I hit the rock. I had nowhere to go.
Vasco says he slept by his father's grave. He tried to ask for help from the church which his family had attended, but the priests who knew him and his father had moved on. He didn't know how to explain, so he left.
I went to the rail station and I jumped on a train and I went to Livingston.
And why were you going to Livingston?
I don't know. I just sat on the train and it went to Livingston and I just sat there.
Vasco doesn't know for sure how old he was and there's no one he can ask. But he thinks he was about 10 or 11, a young child boarding a train to a place he didn't know and with no idea what to do next.
I had no plan. Nothing. So I just went and I got off the train and I was walking. I didn't know Livingston. At the station, I met this young boy. He took me to where they used to sleep and introduced me to street life. So I became a street child.
The boy was Lennox. Did he just immediately recognize you as someone else
No.
who was homeless?
Yeah, he didn't know who I was, but because I looked lost. I had the same clothes for over a week, so he could tell that this guy is lost. And we were almost the same age, mate. And so he approached me and said, hi, how are you? Where are you from? So he started speaking Nyanja. So I told him, then he said, oh, so are you with an auntie? Are you lost? I said, no, I'm not lost and no one is looking for me. Then I said, nobody cares about me, so I'm just on my own. So he said, okay, come, I introduce you to my friends. That's how he took me to his friends and introduced me. So I stayed for a year with him.
Lennox was just another child in the same desperate situation as Vasco, but he became a vital friend and mentor.
He introduced me to street life, how to fetch for food. So I started the street life in Livingston. We could sleep maybe at the rail station. We could go cook at an unfinished building. We had about 4 different places where I would sleep from in Livingston.
With Lennox's help, Vasco learned how to survive in his new home.
Each city has got its way of life. Livingston is near Zimbabwe. So there's a lot of cross-border business. So we'd carry things for people, like bales of sugar, boxes of alcohol, because there's Zimbabwe there, there's Botswana, there's Namibia, or close to Livingstone. So we would do pieceworks, cutting things for people, and then that would sustain you. I had a few friends whom we lived together with. Many of them were lost guys, very calm, not very aggressive. It was a good team. So they introduced me to alcohol, and we used to wrestle a lot with friends. They were slightly older than me, and I was the youngest.
Vasco says he was about 12 or 13 when he tried narcotics for the first time.
Everybody was drinking and smoking and sniffing the drug on the street. It's like glue by then, but now there's a different one. It was all new to me. So I was scared. For 6 months, I managed not to drink. But after 6 months, I was introduced to alcohol and smoking. That's a way of life on the street. You need to drink and smoke and do what everybody does for you to survive.
What were your biggest fears when you were living on the street? What were you most scared of?
In Livingstone, I was scared of the dark in the night. Because every time it's getting dark, I'll be thinking, oh my gosh, where are we going to sleep now? No blankets, no pillow, nothing. We're covered in boxes and plastics. I was scared of the night. That was my greatest fear. Whenever it's getting dark, I'm thinking, oh, okay, here we go again.
At a certain point, Vasco and his friend Lennox moved together to a different town in the Copper Belt. Vasco says there was a trade fair happening in the Copper Belt, which might have been an opportunity to make more money. But life there was different to everything Vasco got used to in Livingstone.
That's when the journey really began. I found that the street guys there were different from Livingstone. The language was different. None of them understood what I spoke. So I had to learn the Bemba now, and the street Bemba. And I had to learn now stealing and fighting very aggressively. Not the basic wrestling we used to do with my friends in Livingstone, but this one was different. I had to learn how to use a knife, how to use a screwdriver. I had to learn how to show no mercy.
Why did you need to learn that?
That's the only way you could survive on the street. Because it was, when we got there, Lennox said to me, Vasco, now this is different. You were from nursery, now welcome to the real life. So he wants, so if you think of stabbing someone, don't hesitate. Stab them and warn them later. So when you say, I'll stab you, make sure you've already stabbed them. Because if you don't do it, they'll do it first. And you'll be hurt.
And who would that threat have been coming from, Vasco? Who would you be scared of being attacked by?
So you see, the way it is, each street is divided into gangs and territories. So each territory has got its own gang. So I was introduced to this gang, which Lennox used to stay way back. And then I learned Lennox has been on the street for 3 years by that time. So he knew his way about, and he knew where he belonged. So he introduced me as his young brother. Then he handed me over to another guy who started looking after me and then taught me all those things. And now we had operations whereby in the evening we had to go in the field to go steal. We go to houses stealing from where they do their laundry. We get clothes and then we go and sell them. We look at passing at people's houses, checking their door. If we find they've left shoes, we get them. The cars are parked, we try to open the doors. And I learned how to open doors, even with an alarm. I learned a lot of things which I had no idea.
If there was a turning point, a period when Vasco shed his old self and became someone else, someone who was more likely to survive in this hostile environment, it was during this period in the Copper Belt.
I was an animal in the making. These things which I all started learning, I didn't even have an idea that they ever existed. I didn't know, because in my city where I came from, we didn't have street children. So I didn't even know there were street children. I had no idea about street children. I didn't know, but I was traumatized. And I was living in shock without realizing it. So my mind quickly adjusted and I became concealed. So I thought I became tough, but then little did I know that I became an animal. I became worse than the people I found. I became the devil's workshop. Whatever friend would suggest, I would always say yes. Let's beat that man, yes. Let's go steal there, yes. Let's go smoke some weed, yes. Let's attack those schoolboys, yes. Let's do this to those girls, I'll say yes. Everything, I'll say yes, because I believed in my head that nobody cared, so why should I care?
And Vesco, did you at all at that time think about your future and what that might look like? How did you imagine your future at the time?
No, because you see, when Dad was still alive, I had a dream, because we could sit. Dad would say, oh, so what do you want to be when you grow up? When I was on the street, all that dreams was gone. And there was no time for me to think about. I had no future. I had nothing to lose. Really, what I wanted was to die. I had nothing to live for.
As a small child with his father, Vesco had attended church and believed in a Christian vision of God. But on the streets, that faith no longer brought him comfort.
I believe there was a man watching all of us. And I believe I was taught God is love. So when I found myself in that situation, and I was like, you know what, I'm just an innocent child on the street. And if they say God is love, why am I on the street? And you tell me God is love? So to me, all this church thing wasn't making any sense to me. So I stopped believing in God.
That sense of betrayal led to fury, which Vesco started taking out on anyone connected to the church.
I attacked mainly men. So especially those in church uniforms, I used to call them pretenders.
And what would you attack them for?
They're just a bunch of liars and pretenders, thieves. So I see someone coming from church with a Bible and a church shirt. I'll just go to them and start fighting them for no reason. Get the money from their pocket, remove the shoes, and
It seemed like a spiral into a pit which would be difficult to ever get out of. In the end, the turning point for Vesco came, just as it had all those years ago, with another painful loss.
He became a brother I never had. So when he died, I was heartbroken.
In 7 years on the streets, Lennox was the closest thing Vesco had to family. He had looked after him in his early days and been with him through his darkest periods. But when Vesco was around 17, that crucial brother figure died.
For the first time in 7 years, I was heartbroken. Because I'd reached a stage whereby I never had remorse, I never showed remorse, I was never sorry, I never smiled, I never laughed. I lost the sense of humor, I was just a different person.
Perhaps it's not surprising. But the loss of Lennox, on top of everything he'd already lost, was too much for Vesco to bear. After years of fighting to survive, he finally gave up.
I started believing in my heart that where my father and mother were, they were very happy. So maybe if I die, I'll go join them and have a happy life.
Vesco took drastic measures and ended up in hospital. There, an outreach group from an organization called Fountain of Hope came and found him. Vesco says they tried to help him on the streets before, but he never trusted them and just ran away. But they followed him to hospital and started speaking to him there.
So they followed me to the hospital. They were on the bedside till I was discharged.
When Vesco was discharged, he went with them to an orphanage in Lusaka.
They gave me books, that was my first gift, to convince me, to show me that they really meant it, that I'll go to school. So that's how I went back to school. I started going to school. So I was 7 years behind. So it's like I was in school with young boys. And I look older now in class, which was very difficult for me. But because I loved school so much, I felt young inside.
It wasn't a straightforward happy ending. The streets had taught Vesco to behave a certain way. And at school, he was, in his own words, a bully.
Well, I always moved with a knife or a screwdriver in my trousers. Always. In class, wherever I am, I always had a screwdriver in my waist. To this very day, street children always move with a screwdriver. You need to be armed all the time. So even at school, I was like that.
With the patient support of teachers and social workers, Vasco did eventually make it through to finish his education. He was the only one to manage it out of the small group from the orphanage who attended school together. Recognizing what an achievement that was, Vasco decided he wanted his future to be about helping other street kids, like he'd been helped. It's a huge challenge to take on. I spoke to the charity Zambia Orphans Aid, who've been working with at-risk children in Zambia for the past 20 years. They told me they've seen the same change as Mutuna, more children out begging and more children without a home to go back to. They say with rising poverty levels, extended families are often struggling to meet their own needs, so are less likely to have the capacity to take on orphaned and vulnerable children as they used to. They say their partners are reporting more children turning to begging for food or even putting themselves at greater risk with child labour or even prostitution. And with COVID, the past few years have seen additional challenges as well, not just from the illness itself, but social distancing measures making it harder for people to work and harder for schools to do safeguarding when they're closed for months at a time. Vasco often visits children on the street, and at the moment he's been joining a government mission to do a head count of street children.
So these are day scholars. Okay. So what we're trying to do is to get the numbers, the total number of all the kids found on the street in the night.
It's highly personal work.
So I had to face my past, and I have to go to places where my friends are still there on the street. Some are still alive, they're still there on the street, still doing the same thing we used to do. So I became like a living example whereby they can see that everyone can change and be different, because I was worse. I was an animal on the street, and then going there and telling them, giving them the message of hope and telling them to believe in themselves and that they can make it.
Despite all the growing challenges, Vasco says some things are getting better.
The number is increasing, yes, because of the lifestyle and everything, but people know, they can tell the difference between a street child and just a thief. So they know these are street children. There's more information on street children now. In the past, it used to be just international people. You see a white person, oh, they're coming to help street children, maybe, or blah, blah. But nowadays, even the government is getting more involved. Local people like us, we're getting more involved. So this is our problem. We need to work with it and deal with it. They used to call us thieves. People were scared of us, but nowadays people can send the street child to go and buy food in a restaurant. So that has changed.
Vasco says that the first priority for organizations like his is to reach children who are relatively new to the street, to try help them before they fall down the hole of substance abuse, which changed his life.
We don't give up on them. We try and help them. Where they're still new on the street, we try and pick them in. I've been doing this work for more than 15 years. I've been around for some time. Thank God, I've seen change. God has used me to touch lives. Some of the people are now working, they are police officers. Some are in the medical field, they are doctors. Some are teachers, some are nurses. We don't give up on children. Because I've been in that show. I know how it feels not to trust somebody. I know how it feels to be betrayed. I know how it feels to go for days without eating any food. Kids have found themselves in situations. So all we have to do is to separate behavior and the child.
And Vasco, can I ask, what's your life like now? Do you have a family of your own?
I had a woman, we have kids. I have a son, a very handsome boy, Paul, and then I've got twins. Lisa and Joshua, and then I've got other boys whom I got from the street, and I live with them. They're in school, they stay with me.
How many have you taken in?
And two I took in from the street, and they're very good boys. I've lived with them for some time.
Welcoming those boys into his family, rather than leaving them in the orphanage, has been important to Vasco.
We believe it's best for a child to grow up in a family setup, because then they can have that sense of belonging. Myself, speaking from experience, I never had that sense of belonging because I grew up from a safe facility. And then there's a lot of dependence syndrome in a facility because everything is provided for you. So it was very difficult for me to fit in and be with a woman, because sometimes I would forget that I've got a wife and I'll just sleep in the sitting room, in the living room. I would forget. You need to be gentle towards women. You need to show that you care. You need to listen. But I never had all that. So my first marriage didn't work, because it was difficult for her to understand me as well. It didn't work out. But right now, I'm not married, but I'm engaged.
Engaged. Congratulations.
I just pray that my kids will never go through what I went through. My main dream is to see the number of street children reduced from the street. I believe there are so many Vascos out there who can be helped. Somebody never gave up on me, so we don't give up on children.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Comb. We've got just one more episode for you before we take a little break. In the meantime, we've actually got more than 70 episodes in our back catalogue, so plenty of listening for you to do if you haven't caught up with all our episodes. And if you're not already a member of our Facebook group, come and join The Comb community. That way we stay connected. Just search for The Comb on Facebook. Next week.
Like, the difference was clear when I was dark and when I was bleaching. I merged those two pictures and I compared them. I was like, no, I have to. I loved my dark self. I said, I have to get back to this. I just wanted to get back to being dark. I hated the way I looked when I was bleached. I looked tired. I looked sick.
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart, Mtuna Chanda, and me, Kim Chakaneta. Frank McQueenie did our sound design, Mike Adley was our studio manager, and our editor is Piers Lynch. The Comb is part of the Focus on Africa radio family.